This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
The Presidencies of the United States is a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network. Hello and welcome to the Presidencies of the United States. I'm your host, Jerry Landry. A couple of months back, I had the pleasure of having a conversation with author and historian Selena B. Baker. Selena is a multiple award-winning historical fiction author, an American Revolution and Victorian America historian. She has presented at events such as History Camp at Boston and Valley Forge, as well as Authors of the American Revolution Congress at Washington Crossing Historic Park. She has been interviewed on podcasts such as Revolution 250 and American Revolution Podcast. She regularly speaks to Daughters of the American Revolution and Sons of the American Revolution chapters throughout the United States. Her extensive travels and research follow the footsteps of the compelling historical people, places, and events she passionately writes about and brings to life. She currently resides in Austin, Texas with her loving husband, John. Selena's latest novel, The Line of Splendor, was about General Nathanael Greene, so our conversation focused on Greene's relationship with General Washington and his post-war career, which was tragically cut short prior to the Constitution being crafted and put in place. You can learn more about Selena's work at her website, selenabbaker.com, and I'll have a link on the page for this episode on my website, presidenciespodcast.com. Without further ado, after this brief message, let's get into the interview.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Selena, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me, Jerry.
Well, and it's amazing. You know, we've been following each other on social media for a while and interacted some. And I know you've been involved with History Camp as well. So it's nice to have an opportunity to come together and really have a conversation, and especially about your work, which, first of all, congratulations on publication.
Thank you so much. It's been exciting. It was a good launch. Really good.
Absolutely. Well, to get us started and talking about the subject of your work, I just wanted to ask, what inspired you to write about Nathanael Greene?
Well, I wrote a 4-book historical fantasy series about the American Revolution called Angels and Patriots that spanned the revolution from December 1774 through the surrender at Yorktown. And Nathanael Greene dropped into the series in the second book, The Cause of 1776. And the more I wrote about him, the more fascinated I became about him. And of course, as the series progressed, we ended up, you know, in the South and the war in the South. And after the series was over and it's all published, I was like, I need to write another book. And I decided to write it about Nathanael Greene.
Well, and I can definitely see that he's become an area of interest for you. For our listeners, we do have video enabled, and Selena has a portrait of Nathanael Greene in her background. So I can definitely tell he's a figure that has become someone that you've gravitated towards.
Yes, yes.
Well, and thinking about that, how did you approach researching General Greene and his life and times? And likewise, what advice would you give for others who are interested in similar lines of research?
Well, I started out reading biographies on him and also reading biographies on people who knew him, like Washington and Light Horse Harry Lee, Francis Marion, a whole plethora of people, Lafayette. And I started looking in the back of those books and seeing what kind of resources they used. And then it just led me to more resources. I wanted to find some, find them on my own so I could write what I wanted to write about Nathaniel Greene, not just what I was reading in the biographies. So that's how I took the approach originally when I was writing Angels and Patriots. And so by the time I wrote about Nathaniel Greene, I was really well versed in how to research things, how to find primary source documents. Foundersarchive.org, of course, is a great resource. And I wanted to find his letters in his own words. And that's how I started researching. And that's how I would advise other people. Especially if you're trying to research a particular person, it's a big field. And Nathaniel Greene wrote a lot. He was a prolific letter writer. So there's a lot of information on him just on the internet.
Yeah. And that's always so helpful to have somebody who has a large body of primary resources that you can look at and actually get a sense of their words and their thoughts. It's fascinating to really get that insight from them directly.
Right, right. And his grandson wrote a 3-volume book on him, The Life of Nathaniel Greene. And he had the primary source letters in his hands. So he published a lot of those letters himself. And that was an extremely good resource. Google Books is a great resource as well.
Absolutely. And just like you said, you know, I always tell folks who are looking into research, once you find one book, look at the bibliography, look at the end notes or the footnotes, and you'll find so many more resources. And then it becomes the question of how far to cast the net, and then how do I get focused back in on my subject?
Yes, exactly. Because you can really get off on a tangent. Everything is fascinating to the author and maybe not so fascinating to the reader. So you kind of have to know when to draw the line exactly.
And I know Presidency's listeners know that I go through kind of the same thing. You know, it's really when you've got a subject that you're really fascinated with, trying to keep that focus and making sure for the audience that you're keeping that focus is important. You can do your own tangents and rabbit holes on our own time.
Right, right, right. Exactly.
Well, Selena, was there anything that really surprised you that you learned about Nathaniel Greene in the course of your research?
Well, when I was writing Angels and Patriots, where he was an important character, he was not the main character, but one of the important generals. Everything surprised me about him. But I think there were a couple of, and these are really odd things. One was there was a son of Liberty named Dr. Benjamin Church, who was feeding information to General Thomas Gage when Gage was in Boston in 1774, 1775, and to the enemy, basically. And when Church's letter got intercepted and he got busted for being a spy, the letter was passed to Nathaniel Greene, who passed it to Washington. And that's just a really small tidbit, but I was really super surprised about that because I had written about Benjamin Church in the series. Another thing that surprised me about him was he had a smallpox scar on his right eyeball that was from his 1770 inoculation, and it was infected. His eyes were infected a lot, and it would sometimes bring him down where he literally was blind from these eye infections. And I know those sound really silly, small things, but those were the kind of things that surprised me about him. Well, I think also his relationship with Anthony Wayne surprised me as well.
Oh, really? Would you mind talking more about his relationship with General Wayne?
Well, of course, they were co-generals during the war and fought at Brandywine in Germantown. And Anthony Wayne ended up coming after the surrender at Yorktown. Anthony Wayne joined Nathaniel Greene in the South. Anthony Wayne was awarded land by the state of Georgia, and so was Nathaniel Greene, and they ended up being neighbors in Georgia. And they became really close during that time, and this was after the war. And that kind of surprised me. I didn't know that they were neighbors for a while when they were living in the South.
Well, and it's interesting, those details, and especially I know it's one of the things with the podcast, you'll end up in kind of this name drop. Oh, well, so-and-so knew so-and-so, or so-and-so was friends with this person. And it can be surprising. And especially in certain cases, like I can't picture these people together, but here they are.
Well, and it's like, you may already know this because you do the Presidencies podcast, and James Monroe was a president. James Monroe led Nathaniel Greene's, was one of the guys that led Nathaniel Greene's vanguard during the March to Trenton in 1776. And that kind of surprised me. I didn't realize he was actually in Greene's vanguard.
Well, and it's those details that really help to bring it alive and bring it together. And you know, going back to that idea of the smallpox scar and how much of an impact that would have. And that's, for me, that's one of those details that really helps to humanize these figures who are just the names that you have to know and the dates that you have to remember in history class. These were real people, and they had times that they suffered ailments and, you know, things just like us.
Right. Exactly.
Well, and going to that time kind of after the Revolution, because so much of the focus and works about Nathaniel Greene has been on his service in the Revolutionary War, where, of course, he became a trusted general under George Washington. But I was wondering if you could speak about what happened to Greene after the war and whether he, like many of the other generals in the Revolution, ended up getting involved in politics in any way.
Greene's story after the war is fairly sad story. He was not getting help from the Continental Congress, as many of the generals were not, when he was in command of the Southern Army. And he was forced to buy uniforms for his troops through a Charleston speculator named John Banks. And John Banks entered a money-making scheme that went bad. And so Congress stopped paying his creditors for these uniforms for Nathaniel's army. So Banks said, "I'm not delivering these provisions to you without a guarantee." And Nathaniel Greene signed a guarantee for £30,000, money he did not have. So he ended up having to borrow money from Robert Morris, the superintendent of finance, from Lafayette, from other friends to support his family. And he never got out of that debt. And he died in this horrible debt. And it was very sad. He and his wife and kids didn't have a home of their own after the war. They were renting a house in Newport. They ended up moving down to Georgia to Mulberry Grove after the war. And that's where he died when he was age 43. He was, and backing up a little, he was offered the position of Minister of War. I believe it was in 1781 or 82. He turned that down because he's still in charge of the troops in the South. Benjamin Lincoln ended up taking that position. So I think what I was getting to about Greene dying after the war, he died in 1786, he never had a chance to enter politics. He said he didn't want to be a politician. He felt like he didn't have the money to keep himself in a high place. I think that if he had lived and he'd been called on to be a politician, if Washington had called on him, he would have done so.
Well, and as we've seen in Presidencies, and especially in the Seat at the Table series, you know, we don't necessarily think about it, but there was this big cost financially, personally, for folks who were called on to public service positions at that time. You know, even though we look at the salaries and compared to the average salary of average folks at that time, it was a big salary. Still thinking about the cost of transportation, having to either maintain a home or find somewhere to rent, and supporting a family and supporting your house back at home, you know. It's just, there was all these costs that added up, and there are so many folks who went in to either Congress or the cabinet, and they came out of it and they were wiped out financially. It took them years to kind of rebuild and get things back in shape. And some, just like Nathaniel Greene, just never did. And especially if they got involved in debt, and we've had a few instances, and especially some of the Southern presidents, you know, Jefferson, Madison, and Monroe got in debt to the point that they could just never recover.
And I don't, Nathanael Greene didn't really even have the funds to get into more debt. Yeah, he had five kids and, like you said, maybe maintaining a house in Philadelphia or wherever, New York at the time, would have been more than he could have supported.
Yeah.
If he had lived to have done that.
Yeah. And kind of going along those lines, because, you know, with his untimely demise, that, of course, kept him from being involved in the government that came under the Constitution. But I was wondering, based on your research, if you had any sense of what role, if any, he might have played in the political or public life of the early republic once the constitutional government was in place. Could you see him more like in Congress or possibly the Washington administration? Or, you know, you mentioned General Anthony Wayne, and he was called back to service in the Northwest Territory in combating the Native forces there. How would you see Greene have going if he had lived into that period after Washington became president?
You know, I don't, and this is just from me studying him, I don't see him being a congressman. His battles with the Continental Congress were epic, especially when he was quartermaster general. He had lots of enemies in Congress, the Continental Congress, and he had lots of supporters in the Continental Congress. And maybe that may have soured him on that. He may have held a position in the cabinet, possibly Secretary of War. Of course, Henry Knox was doing that early on. I could see him doing that. You brought up Anthony Wayne, and I'm just veering off here a little bit. Interestingly enough, Fort Greenville that Anthony Wayne had there in the Ohio Territory was named after Nathanael Greene. But I could see those two getting back together and doing something that maybe Greene would have even joined Anthony Wayne out there.
I'm sure he would have felt much better having him at his side than James Wilkinson.
So. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. James Wilkinson, dastardly.
Oh, it is. That has been one of the joys of the podcast, to follow the epic story of James Wilkinson. He's even in the War of 1812 coming back again.
See, I don't know a whole lot about him past the Revolution. Yeah, but I know a lot about him. He was in Saratoga and that kind of a thing. But yeah.
If you're ever looking for a history tangent, James Wilkinson is a good one to explore.
It keeps
on. And I've had listeners say, you know, are we ever going to get rid of James Wilkinson? Is he finally going to go away? I'm like, no, he just keeps coming back. He's, you know, even James Madison tried to get rid of him and couldn't.
Oh, he did.
Brought him up for court-martial, removed him from command. It ended up the court-martial, they exonerated him, and Madison was forced to bring him back into a command post.
Oh, my gosh. Good.
Yes. Yes. But yeah, I could definitely see that. And that was one thing that, and especially you had brought up Anthony Wayne. I could see Washington, because that was part of the reason why Anthony Wayne was the one that Washington chose for that role in what became the Legion of the United States, because he knew him from the Revolution. He knew that he was somebody he could rely on. But I think Greene was probably even more so somebody who he could really trust.
Oh, definitely. Definitely so.
And speaking of Washington, so, you know, as we were discussing setting up this interview, you had mentioned that the Washingtons still continued to have a relationship with Nathaniel's widow, Katie Greene, after mm-hmm. his death. So would you mind speaking to what we know about that?
Well, during the war, Katie was extremely close to Martha Washington because they, you know, spent time in winter cantonments with their husbands. And Martha Washington was one of the few generals' wives who didn't criticize Katie Greene, because Katie liked to dance and drink wine, and she was a happy person. And Washington often made sure that her letters got to Nathanael Greene in the South. And when she went to see Greene in the South, Katie stopped in Philadelphia to see George and Martha Washington. They were there. This was in late 1781, early 1782. So after Nathaniel died and Washington did his Southern tour in 1791, he went down to the South and saw her, visited her at Mulberry Grove, where she was still living, twice during the tour. She also ended up marrying, it was about 8 years after Nathaniel died. They had a tutor for their children named Phineas Miller, who went to Savannah with them. She ended up marrying Phineas in Philadelphia. And George and Martha Washington stood witness to their wedding. And I don't think there were a lot of people there. I think the Washingtons were two of just a handful of people that were there. I don't know a whole lot more about it, but Washington found Katie to bring a lot of happiness to camp, and he appreciated that about her. And so he was always felt kind of close to her, as he did Nathaniel himself.
Well, and it's interesting because that definitely, Washington was always one who did like that mixed company, and mm-hmm. especially I know that it meant so much to him and to some of the other soldiers to have like Martha Washington and others in camp. It helped to alleviate some of the, I'm sure, anxiety and stress of the situation.
Right. And the whole domestic circle and, you know, feeling of that, where these soldiers and were missing that while they were off to war.
Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, and you mentioned her wedding, and it seems like so many weddings, we think of weddings as being these big affairs nowadays and elaborate. And there are so many that were just, you know, at somebody's home, and you would just have a couple of witnesses. And so it was interesting that the Washingtons were the ones who were there for her as she remarried.
Right. Yes, I thought it was too.
Well, and thinking of Greene, you know, how well remembered do you think he was by his contemporaries and by the generation that came after the Revolution?
Alexander Hamilton delivered a eulogy for the nationwide meeting of the Society of Cincinnati in New York City in 1789, July 4th, 1789. And it was this really long, you can find it on foundersarchives.org, and it's this really long, heartfelt, tear-jerking eulogy that he delivered, which goes to show that how much Nathaniel Greene was loved. And Nathaniel Greene was the president of the Rhode Island Society of Cincinnati, but he never really got a chance to participate because he was so mired in his debt and problems after the war. Light Horse Harry Lee, for instance, his story was kind of sad the way his life ended, but he chose to die on Cumberland Island, where Nathaniel Greene owned Cumberland Island. And, of course, this was after Nathaniel Greene died. This was in 1818. Light Horse Harry Lee went to Cumberland Island to die under the care of Nathaniel Greene's daughter, Louisa. So this is how much he thought of Nathaniel Greene, as well as Washington. He was a huge Washington admirer as well. And these were kind of the things that showed how much his contemporaries cared about him. Nathaniel Greene's oldest son, George, went to school in France under the care of Lafayette. He came back about 1792 or so and drowned in the Savannah River, unfortunately. It was a sad, sad thing. Lafayette also laid the cornerstone of Nathaniel Greene's monument in Savannah, Georgia, when he was here on his American tour in 1824. So again, he's showing his respect to this general that he fought beside and how much he thought about Nathaniel Greene. As far as the next generation after the Revolution, I really can't answer to that well what people thought about him. You know, who the surviving people were after the Revolution, you know, Greene and like John Adams, who, you know, lived to be 90 or You would know more about it than me. They had a falling out during the revolution, and I don't know if he ever talked about him after that. So I don't think he can answer that second part really intelligently or well.
No worries. Yeah, and it's interesting what made me think about it, and I love that you brought up Lafayette's trip to the United States, because that was really a time, you know, there were so few people from that revolutionary generation still around, but you know, you have these symbols like Lafayette, you have John Adams, you have all these folks coming back together for this last time and being able to share their experiences and their ideas of what the revolution was, what it meant. And I know there was this letter from John Adams to Thomas Jefferson talking about, you know, that future generations would never understand what the revolution, what the reality really was. And here's somebody who was able to at least share in part, you know, being able to write of his experiences. But even that, he just felt like they wouldn't understand. And so I was thinking of Greene, and, you know, but you did mention, I think it was his grandson who wrote the multi-volume on his life.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So being able to have somebody in those future generations being able to share, I think, was important for kind of keeping his legacy alive. And it sounds like in terms of his contemporaries, there were so many who thought so highly of him and made sure that he was remembered.
Yes.
Well, and Selena, what legacy do you think Nathaniel Greene left for the United States? And what's one thing that students of history in the present day should know about him?
I think the legacy that he left was that he taught a lesson of persevering, that no matter how hard the job was, if you believed in it, you could get it done to a certain degree. He is the man, in my opinion, who chased Lord Charles Cornwallis out of the Carolinas, which he did do that when he was commanding the Southern Army, just out of pure perseverance and fortitude. And Cornwallis ended up in Yorktown. And I think that if Nathaniel Greene had not done that, the surrender at Yorktown likely would not have happened, or at least happened much later, or something to that effect. And I think that America should know what he did to contribute to that pivotal moment of the war, the siege of Yorktown and the surrender, because the other generals in the South had failed. Benjamin Lincoln failed, Horatio Gates failed, and Greene came in there working with nothing. He had nothing. His army was destitute. And yet they still believed in him and they still persevered. And Cornwallis said, I can't do this anymore. And I think people should know that that's a lesson to be learned for even now, is you can do it if you try hard enough, put enough into it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the thing. And especially being in the Charlotte, North Carolina area, you know, you've got Kings Mountain, Guilford Courthouse close by. You know, this was a pivotal point in the history. And it really did change once Greene was sent south and took charge of things, because there were so many defeats. Camden, it was not a good place. And if not for that, to your point, you know, Yorktown wouldn't have happened, and we don't know what would have happened.
Right. We don't know. And Guilford Courthouse was definitely a pivotal part of the war, even though he lost the battle. Greene lost the battle. He lost all his battles. That was a pivotal point, Guilford Courthouse.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes, and like you said, that idea of perseverance, you know, even if you lose a battle, the war is still not over.
Right. Exactly.
So as we wrap up our conversation, I was wondering if you could share with the audience where your writing and research interests are leading you next.
Well, I'm actually going back to my first love of the American Revolution, Dr. Joseph Warren. He, I don't know if everyone knows who he is. He's most known for being dying at the Battle of Bunker Hill, becoming America's first martyr, but he has a lot more to his story than that. He was an important character in the first book of my American Revolution series. And so now I'm pursuing writing a biographical novel about him. I haven't gotten so far. I've been really absorbed with what's going on with getting my book out for Nathaniel Green, but that's where I've turned my attention is back to Joseph Warren.
Well, and I think that lesson from Green can be applied here, you know, that persistence of keeping going. And I know that it will be an amazing work, have no doubt. But in the meantime, congratulations on the publication. And for our listeners, the book is The Line of Splendor, a novel of Nathaniel Green and the American Revolution. Selena, congratulations on your new publication.
Thank you, Jerry. I appreciate that.
And we greatly appreciate you coming on Presidencies and telling us a little more about Green. You know, since we focus on the presidency, he's one of those characters that unfortunately we haven't had a chance to talk about. But I hope our listeners really get from this conversation that he was somebody who was so pivotal, not just to the life of Washington, but so many others who had such an impact on American history and on the presidency. And so, Selena, thank you so much for being able to share your insight on this amazing figure in American history.
Thank you, Jerry. Appreciate it. It's a great time.
Thanks so much to Selena Baker for her time and the insight that she provided in this conversation. And be sure to check out all of her books, including the latest, The Line of Splendor, a novel of Nathaniel Green and the American Revolution. You can find out about her work on her website, selenabbaker.com. And Selena is active on Facebook and the formerly known as Twitter. I'll have a link to Selena's website on the notes for this episode on my website, presidenciespodcast.com. There, you can find past episodes of the podcast, links to learn more about all of the presidents, and information on how you, yes, you, dear listener, can help to support the work of the Presidencies podcast. Equipment, research materials, and monthly fees to support the podcast can quickly start to add up. So thank you so much to our generous patrons who helped to offset the cost, including our latest patron, James. Thank you so much, James, for your support. For as little as $1 a month, you too can pledge a monthly donation at patreon.com/presidencies, which gets you various perks, including a monthly update on what's coming with the podcast and access to an ad-free podcast feed. Those at the $10 a month and higher level are able to talk directly with me once a month about presidential history and can ask whatever burning questions they have about recent episodes or anything presidents related. If you're not ready to commit to a recurring donation, we do have an option for a one-time donation available through buymeacoffee.com/presidencies. Leaving a rating and review for the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or anywhere else with that capability is also a quick and easy way to show your support. For all of you who share information about the podcast with others, I cannot thank you enough. If you'd like to reach out to me, please feel free to send an email to presidenciespodcast, that's all one word, @gmail.com. You can also connect with me on social media if you haven't already. I'm available on Facebook, Blue Sky, Post, and Mastodon as Presidencies, on the formerly known as Twitter at Presidencies89, and on Instagram and Threads as Presidencies Podcast. Last but certainly not least, I thank you so much for listening. Until next time, stay safe and healthy, be kind to one another, and take care, dear friends.
Hey, podcast listeners, I'm Paul Brandis introducing my podcast, Countdown to Dallas. It's a fascinating, in-depth look at the seemingly unconnected events that led to the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. It's based on my book of the same title. In that book and in this podcast, I go all the way back to 1939, when Lee Harvey Oswald was born into a troubled and dysfunctional family. I'll follow his transient and often violent teenage years and young adulthood, painting a fuller picture of the man who would later become Kennedy's killer. I also take a look at events unfolding in that era, like Cuba and Vietnam, and I'll unpack the conspiracy theories too, not one of which has ever been conclusively proven. Subscribe to Countdown to Dallas at evergreenpodcasts.com or your favorite listening app, October 31st.